Your guys' mics are on, too, because I'm deaf, so I can't hear. So what are you going to tell them to do? Nothing? That's so well. Nothing to do. What do you tell them?
Do something.
Do something? What are you going to tell them? Okay, that's good, Jason. So think about what has happened prior to kind of developing your migraine. What's actually recommended is for them to actually have a diary or a log. And so there's lots of different things that could actually bring on a migraine, because we've talked about some of the things. It could be odors, it could be stress, it could be drinks, it could be food, it could be a lot of different types of things. So, like, if they want to try and figure out what triggers their migraine, and if you're a migraine sufferer, it's really good to know what triggers it, because obviously you would want to avoid that if it keeps bringing on a migraine. So you tell them to try and keep a log of things they eat, things they're surrounded by, scents they're around, activities they do, and then try and deduce, after experiencing so many migraines, what could be a trigger. You could start with the main triggers, you know, do you consume this, 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 and this, and try and help them figure out their trigger. But oftentimes, you know, it's, you know, they have to kind of slowly start taking a log and figuring out what to trigger them for them. Which drug's best? You have to listen to your patient, okay? Meaning, there are a wide variety of them. We're going to talk about the triptans today. We're going to talk about some of the popular ergotrips that are used, still used today as well with patients. And one thing you want to keep in mind with migraines is that migraines is, in a way, you know, a large portion of the medical community looks at migraines similar to kind of like insomnia. They're like, yeah, insomnia, that's not a real disease. You know, migraines, they kind of share a similar, you know, idea with them. But anybody that suffers from migraines understands that it's a true disease and you need treatment. You have to tailor it to the patient, though, because it's what the patient actually wants. Like, for example, we talked and alluded last time about onset, durations. It's going to vary tremendously depending upon what your patient wants. So you have to figure out which drug works best for them, what kind of migraine they suffer from. Would they rather have a fast onset one? Would they rather have a longer duration one? And pay attention to the other meds that they're taking. Why do I say this when we're talking about especially ergot derivatives? Right. You don't want them taking anything else that's a vasoconstrictor, because it's additive. The effects could be additive. Rebounds. We talk a lot about rebounds, things that can cause rebounds. What can bring on rebounds? What are some of the most popular things that can bring on rebounds? Okay, Vicodin could, right?
Yep.
Your narcotics, what?
Yep.
Caffeine could bring on overconsumption of caffeine. And probably what's the most common?
NSAIDs,
right? So you got to be careful about what your patients are consuming, because not everybody that suffers from migraine is on prescription treatment, and so this could be exacerbating their problems. Also supplements, herbal supplements. Pay attention to those, because you might be able to make some recommendations to help your patients in that regard as well. Okay, I believe we left off with ergamine tartrate. Is this where we left off last time? Okay. Now, ergamine products are going to be the best if you take them early on in the cat. So, for example, remember the people that suffer from aura. Remember what an aura is? What is it? Visual disturbance prior to a migraine. Okay. So that would be early on in attack, right? They sense that it's coming on. If you take it earlier on, you're going to have a better chance of it actually being very effective. About 50 to 70% of people that suffer from migraines will respond very well to ergotamine products as long as you give it early on in attack. One thing about migraine treatments, though, is the patients that suffer from migraines are going to be very selective and very, apprehensive about changing medications, because you as a pharmacist need to counsel them. Hey, if this drug's not working for you, we have a lot of other options out there. Let me help counsel. counsel you, let me help figure out which drug would be best for you. You have to be willing to change. It's kind of like people that suffer from epilepsy. People that get on a medication that it works for them, it controls their epilepsy, they don't want to try anything else, right? And even if it doesn't control the best, they're still kind of reluctant because what if I get something worse, or what if my epilepsies come back and stuff like that, or seizures come back. So with migraines, the mentality is the same. People think, it's not the best, but I don't want the migraines to come back. What if they put me on something that is worse and yada yada? You have to try and talk your patient into really believing that there are truly, bless you, good other options out there, and they could do very well on them. People are very reluctant. Some people actually go as far as they think, well, my physician put me on this, it's not working, I guess I have no relief, like there's no other options. I mean, that's insane, right? But you as a pharmacist are going to be able to counsel them much more. In a lot of physicians' offices, it's a revolving door, and they're not doing the counseling that they should do. So this puts the onus on you, and gives you a great opportunity to try and help patients. Now, if ergotamine is mixed with caffeine, which we talked about the reasons why you would do this, because why? You increase absorption, and what's the problem with ergotamine products? You have absorption issues, because why? They're so large, right? And so you have bioavailability issues. If you mix it with caffeine, you get what is known as caffergot. And caffergot is a very common product that you can use, and it's very effective in controlling migraines. Okay. I'm talking about seizures for a second there. Anyway, the biggest thing with ergotamine, though, when you take caffergot is you're not going to be able to take as many doses. Usually with migraine treatment, you can repeat the dose to take another dose. You probably will only be able to take a couple of doses if you have this ergotamine product or you're consuming it. So you really need to be careful about what you're telling your patients to take. There's lots of different ways you can give ergotamine derivatives. They have oral tablets, which hence caffergot. Then you have like suppositories. You have lots of different ways you can get it. Give it. Now, from a pregnancy standpoint, are you going to recommend any ergot derivative to anyone that's pregnant? What if she suffers from migraines? Can you recommend anyone? No. Why? It's contraindicated. Is pregnancy category what? X. Okay, you just don't do it. Now, the good thing, remember last time when we talked about migraines versus clusters? You remember when I said that? What's the difference? What's clusters? Yeah, like remember on that scale from 0 to 10? That's your worst. It's very throbbing migraines. And you can have migraines and suffer periods of clusters. There's only certain drugs that will help clusters. You could use caffergot to alleviate throbbing cluster headaches. So that's one you could use for that. If you use other ergotamine derivatives, if it's not caffergot, it's going to have less effect in treating clusters. So we're not going to really recommend that. But caffergot can be effective in treating cluster migraines. The onset for your drug is going to be relatively quick, within a 30-minute onset. Ideally, we'd love to see 15 minutes, but 30 minutes is still considered pretty quick. You can use it for acute migraines. The problem is it's only going to have a 3 to 4 hour duration. So people that suffer from long migraines are not going to have the relief. They're going to have to redose, etc. But there's a lot of advantages to using ergotamine products because they have been used for a long time. They're cheap and relatively safe as long as you're careful what types of patients you give it to and what other things they're taking with it. Okay, another one we're going to talk about is Migranal. And Migranal is another one that's very effective for treating cluster migraines. Because it will only treat throbbing headaches. And this one is going to be less likely than ergotamine to cause as much nausea and vomiting. Remember last time we talked about when you suffer from migraines, you experience a lot of nausea, vomiting, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity. You want to try and go to a dark, quiet room and just, suffer through it, or hopefully take your med and alleviate your pain. So oftentimes, 9 out of 10, this means you can't go back to work. Well, Migranol has much less nausea and vomiting associated with it, so you have a better chance of being able to return to work. Lots of different forms Migranol comes in, IV, nasal spray, I mean, you name it, it comes in. Very, very fast onset, though. With Capricot, we talked about 30-minute onset. With Migranol, you're going to have 15-minute onset. I want you to know the onsets and durations, because if you don't know that, how are you going to counsel a patient? Because you're not going to know which ones have a fast onset or which ones have a long duration of action. So that's important. The thing with Migranol is that it's going to be a little bit more selective for the serotonin subtype, so you're going to have a little bit fewer side effects. It's very well tolerated, and you get very selective vasoconstriction with this one. Actually, this one's rarely associated with any serious side effects. As long as you use it appropriately at the right dose, this one's very effective, especially with your cluster migraines. All right, anytime a drug is going to be lipophilic, you would expect a lot of plasma protein binding. Okay, drug interactions. You're going to avoid it with CYP inhibitors, especially your 3A4. Why am I pointing out 3A4? Do you remember from drug action? Because this is the one that metabolizes the most drugs, right? So 3A4 is a big one. And so anytime you have, if you use Migranol with a CYP inhibitor, what are you going to do? Why do I say don't take it with a CYP inhibitor? What is a CYP inhibitor? Right, so what happens to your metabolism? Decreases. Is that a good thing, especially with the ergonomine product? No, not good at all, right? You're going to increase plasma concentration, you're going to increase side effects, it's not going to be cleared from your body as quickly. Big problem. So don't make sure you ask your patients what they're on. Protease inhibitors, right? These ones are very easy to know because they all end in ADIR, right? Macrolide antibiotics. A lot of people are on macrolide antibiotics, and so you got to be really careful, especially when you're counseling patients with migraines if you're going to put them on Migranol. A lot of people think, oh, you're ergot derivatives. Like, you know, sometimes you're like, I'm going to learn about ergot derivatives. This happened a couple years ago. I was talking about ergots, and people are like, why are we still talking about ergots? You don't see that many people on them. Very rarely do you see them on. I'm like, you have people on them, and it works very well for them. You put them on a triptan, it's not going to control their migraine. Not to say that's going to be with everybody, but some people, they don't control their migraines. You leave them on an ergot, and it controls their migraine really well. So some people, it works really well for. You're right, it's older medications, but a couple years ago, we were talking about ergots, and we were talking about ergot toxicity, and this kid was sitting in the student was sitting in the table, and he's like, this is insane. I was just watching, what was it, House last night, and didn't you see the episode they were talking, it turned out to be ergot toxicity, and then he was asking questions about, can it really cause hallucinations? And I'm like, yeah, didn't you listen to the lecture? Anyway, but yeah, people are still on ergot derivatives, and if it works for them, then it's good. You want them to take what works for them. That's why I try and really push it through your brain. Work with your patient. Figure out what they suffer from and make them understand that, you know, what works for one doesn't work for all. What a physician might put you on first might not work for you, but we want to try and work with you to get your migraines under control, and, you know, that's very important. Anytime you use an ergot product, though, compared to a triptan, you're going to just have more side effects because it's less selective in binding to your receptors. And so you'll usually have a little more nausea and vomiting. And, you know, you sometimes get a lot of GI upset even, a little lightheadedness, stuff like that. That's very common. But not everybody experiences them, and it depends on how frequently you're dosing it as well. All right, I already told you about that. We already alluded to that. So you might think, well, then why the heck, if it causes more side effects and stuff, would I want to use it? Well, because, like I said, it works really well with some people, and they don't, you know, why would you want to take it away from them if they don't get treatment or alleviation with other products? Also, we've used it for a long time. We know it's relatively safe as long as you watch who you give it to. They're very potent. They are pretty cheap compared to the triptans, but they're going to have a higher risk of headache recurrence. They're going to be less selective, and they're going to have a little more side effects that go along with them. But let's think for a second. If you're someone that suffers from migraines and you've tried the triptans, let's say you've tried even some anti-epileptic drugs that are effective and you can't get control, what's the big deal? I mean, if you can get control of being on an ergot derivative, sometimes you'll suffer through a little more of the side effects, or you might feel a little nauseated, but hey, your migraine's gone. No big deal. This is much more worth it. Okay, Rachel had a question first.
What was the duration?
Her Migranal has a very fast onset, but the duration of action for Migranal is going to be relatively short. So usually it won't last beyond about 3 hours or so. I recognize your... Did you have a question?
I was going to ask the same thing.
Oh, you're going to ask the same thing. Okay. All right. Let's see. Did we talk? I think we talked about SAMHSA last time. Didn't we talk about that earlier this week? SAMHSA? Met the surgeon? Okay. I think so. Anyway, remember, this is the one that's going to be of, if you consider all the ergot derivatives, this is going to be the weakest vasoconstrictor in the ergot category. So, you know, at one time they thought, well, because it's the weakest vasoconstrictor, maybe we can still give it to pregnant females because it'll cause less uterine stimulation and contraction, but it's still contraindicated with pregnant females because it's still a pregnancy category X. And so we still don't want to give this, even though it's a weak vasoconstrictor, it still causes a lot more vasoconstriction than the triptans. So we wouldn't put them on this. But it will cause weaker vasoconstriction. The problem with SAMHSA is that you never ever want to give this drug to someone that wants immediate relief. Because, for example, if you are somebody that has acute migraines, if you give them a drug that has an onset of 1 to 2 days, which that's SAMHSA, 1 to 2 days, do you think they're going to be very happy with you? No. Right? They might want to throw their coffee in your face or something, right? They're not going to be happy. Anyway, 1 to 2 days onset, so very long. So people sometimes take this one to try and do what? Or as a, prophylaxis, preventative, they want to try and ward off their migraines. If you have a migraine that comes on, you're not going to want to take this one. Common side effects, though, with this one is just a lot of GI upset. And if you have a patient that's on SAMHSA and you want to get them off of it, don't stop abruptly. Try and take a week or 2 weeks and slowly decrease the dose, because why? If you abruptly take them off it, what do you think you're going to see?
Rebounds.
Yeah, so you don't really want to have people experience rebounds. Okay. All right, bromocriptine. I didn't think this one was in your packet, was it? Okay, no, I guess right. Okay, this one is used for a lot of different things. So, for example, you might see this one used for Parkinson's disease, for people that don't really respond very well to L-DOPA. You see this also used with type 2 diabetes, but you see it also with people that suffer from fertility problems. But what you also see it being used for is for migraines, because look at the SAR. Is this an ergot derivative? What's the SAR of an ergot derivative? What? You guys are shy. I'm not going to bite your head off. What is it? What's the SAR? What do you look for? Your tetracyclic ring, right? That has your indole. Does that have it? Yeah, so it's an ergot derivative. The good thing about bromocriptine is that, remember last time when we talked about menstrual migraines? You remember what that is? What did I say? What did you talk about with triggers? What's a trigger? Estrogen. Can females get away from that? No. That's why 75% of females suffer from migraines, right? Well, the big thing about menstrual migraines is, remember, they're more painful, they last longer, and they're agonizing, right? And so you want to be So in the ergot category, you can use this one to treat menstrual migraines because it's pretty effective for it. It's a dopamine, that's what I mean by DA agonist. Not sure Dr. Lovestead uses that acronym, but anyway, this drug also will relieve the other problems that are associated with menstruation, like cramps and a lot of the other things that females complain of. It'll also alleviate that, so it's very effective. Some side effects, though, are going to be a little nausea, like you would expect, a little lightheadedness. You're going to see that with the ergot derivatives, but people that are on this and it alleviates their menstrual migraines, they will deal with that much more than dealing with the menstrual migraine. All right, we talked about Caffergut already. Remember, that's ergotamine with caffeine. But what I wanted to point out is that pay attention to where you find your caffeine types of products, like your theophylline, right, or caffeine. So, like, why do you think chocolate is a trigger? Well, it's not technically caffeine, but see that molecule theobromine has that in it? And that's a derivative, drug derivative of caffeine. All of these molecules that mimic the structure of caffeine are triggers for migraine. So that's why chocolate was in that category. Would tea be in the category? Okay. Would coffee be in the category? Okay, what about energy drinks? That's very popular these days, right? Do you think that would be in the category? Would you normally think of that? You should normally think of that if you're counseling someone that's younger that suffers from migraines, because there's a good chance they might consume products like that, okay? All right, there's other medications that can control migraines as well, and we're going to talk about some of these as we go through. We'll spend a lot of time talking about the anti-epileptic drugs that are used to treat migraines, and then you have other ones in other categories that are useful. But like your beta blockers, your tricyclics, your SSRIs, these are more like last line defense trying to treat and control migraines. You're generally going to either put them on a triptan, first line defense med. Then you might go to an anti-epileptic. You might try an ergot. And then if you just have nothing left to try, then you might try your other ones, which we'll talk about some of those as we go through. Now, what we're going to talk about now, though, is we're going to move and we're going to start talking about the triptans, because the triptans is your first line of defense for treating migraines. So we're going to talk about the differences among the different triptans, and we'll talk about what's actually seen with the triptans and which drugs might be recommended. So keep in mind when we go through the triptans, when we go through the triptans, we're going to see slight modifications in structure. Okay, they're all going to look similar, very similar to each other, and they're all going to improve upon Imitrex. Has anybody in this room never heard of Imitrex? Okay, good. At least we have a starting point. So, Imitrex obviously is our gold standard. We'll talk about Imitrex, we alluded to the downside, negative aspects of it, but every single one after that is going to try and improve upon Imitrex. And so pay attention to the slight modifications, because how they change the structure, not that you need to be memorizing structures. If I tested you on trying to memorize structures, you all would fail miserably. And what would I actually teach you? So what? Structures? That's not what you're going to have to do as a pharmacist. So you don't need to be concerned with memorizing structures. I will always give you the structure, and I'll give you the generic or the brand name. You're like, oh, great, Dr. Bratcher, I got to know the generic and the brand name. Yeah, you're going to be drug expert. You need to know the generic and the brand name. So I will have you, you'll have that. But what we'll point out when it comes time for the structure, they all have the indo ring, because that's your pharmacophore. Remember with the ergot derivatives, we saw that tetracyclic ring. We don't need those other two rings, okay? That left us a lot of problems with absorption. We really only need the indole ring, so all of them will have that. Okay, migraines. We know that women experience them more than men. We know estrogen's a trigger. And we know that children also experience migraines. Most people don't think about children because roughly only 5 to 8% of children actually suffer from migraines. And their migraines tend to be more frontal, and they don't last nearly as long. But some kids truly suffer from migraines, and they need some treatment if they're severe. We're going to also talk about some of the other drugs that are useful in menstrual migraines in a minute. Let's talk about a little bit about the pharmacology. If I am redundant in what Dr. Holt has already taught you, I apologize, but has Dr. Holt taught you anything about migraines? No? Okay. So, good. You aren't going to know it yet. All right, so you might think, well, what the heck is going on with migraines? Where do we actually want to try and get our drugs? Well, research shows that there are changes in the trigeminal nerve network in your brain when you undergo a migraine. And there are chemical imbalances of serotonin that go on. And when you actually suffer a migraine, your serotonin levels initially drop. And when the serotonin levels drop, it causes this trigeminal nerve to release certain neuropeptides that cause the blood vessels to dilate. Might that be a problem? What do you think? What did we talk about last time? Vasodilation, bad, right? Vasoconstriction, that's how we try and alleviate it. The magnesium levels also tend to drop before and after a migraine. That's why magnesium supplementation is often recommended to try and keep it at a homeostatic level and ward off migraines. Okay. I'm going to skip this slide. We'll talk more about the targets in a minute. So you might say to yourself, well, okay, we know that the trigeminal nerve network is where we generally want to get our drugs, right? And we are going to try and selectively target certain subtypes of the serotonin receptors. So where must we get our drugs? Where's our target? What's our barrier we have to overcome? Blood-brain barrier, right? Well, Vivitrex is not able to get across the blood-brain barrier that well, okay? It's actually less lipophilic, more hydrophilic. And so when you have a migraine attack, the blood-brain barrier is compromised. So that's why they say, well, even though Vivitrex is more, you know, hydrophilic, some of it might be able to get across, or it suggests there might be peripheral sites, serotonin sites, that it could actually bind to because the blood-brain barrier is compromised. There are ways you can tell when the trigeminal nerve network is underactivated. So, for example, if your trigeminal nerve network is underactivated, you could go up to somebody, pinch their cheeks like this, and they wouldn't feel it, okay? Now, when you suffer a migraine, your trigeminal nerve network is going to be what? Overactive. We don't have simple tests that we can just go up to Gary and say, do you feel this, or blah, 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 to see if the trigeminal nerve network is overactivated. So you could do scans, and you can test to see whether you do see if the trigeminal nerve network is overactivated. And so that what you see, if you were to do a brain scan, is that you would see that it is very overactivated. And when you take a triptan to try and alleviate this overactivation of the trigeminal nerve network, the triptans are going to bind to specific serotonin receptors to cause vasoconstriction and inhibition of the neuropeptide release so that you can alleviate your migraine attack. Okay, this is a good point to talk about redosing or trying to switch drugs. Triptan should never ever be used within 24 hours of another triptan. Guess why? Right, vasoconstriction is added. We want to make sure the one gets cleared. This is going to mean for everyone except for one. Okay, we're going to talk about a drug called Proba. Proba is the only one that has a half-life of 26 and a half hours. If you know that a drug has a half-life of 26 and a half hours, and would you recommend them taking another one 24 hours later? No, right? So just be careful about that. Now, secondly, all right, you taught us about ergots. Yep, we know they cause more vasoconstriction. Can I go from an ergot and then 24 hours later, can I take a triptan? What do you think? Would you recommend that? Why not? Too much. You haven't given it enough time to be cleared from the body. You have to wait 2 weeks, recommended. to wait 2 weeks if you're on an ergot to switch to a triptan, okay? What if you're on a triptan and you decide to recommend an ergot derivative? Do you need to wait 2 weeks? What do you think? No. For everyone except for one, you really only have to wait what? 24 hours, okay? Except for Proba because of the long half-life. So pay attention because the vasoconstriction can be additive. Now, there are great advantages to using triptans. They're way more selective for the serotonin receptors. So what does that do to side effects? Decreases it, okay? And they're also very well tolerated. They're pretty safe, hence that's why they're oftentimes dispensed first. The disadvantage is what's the number one problem with healthcare? Why are we talking about healthcare reform right now? Because what? It's expensive, right? And the costs keep going up and up. Something's got to give, right? Well, triptans are more expensive. Can't get around that. And you can't use them for all patients. We're constantly looking for new medications you can use for all patients or other types of patients. Because why? What are your high-risk patients? What did we talk about last time? Cardiac issues, right? History of heart attack, stroke, diabetes, hypertension. Well, we already talked about hypertension. Obesity, right? So you got to be careful about what types of patients you give them to. All right, we already know what an aura is. Okay, we're going to move on. All right, triptan side effects. We're going to get to that in a second, but remember, triptans need to be, or any medication, I shouldn't say just triptans, I should say any migraine medication should be tailored to the patient. Triptans are going to be very similar. They're just going to differ on the dosage forms. Most of them have various dosage forms. The onset duration is what I care a lot about because this is what patients care a lot about. We need to be able to figure out what would work best for them. If somebody suffers from long migraines and you put them on Imitrex, which has a very short half-life, might that be a good option for them? No, okay? So you got to know stuff like that. Headache recurrence. What if you have somebody that's been on medications and they experience lots of headache recurrence? Well, you certainly don't want to put them on one that has a good chance. Drug interactions. That's, of course, very big, and that's drilled in your head probably in every class. All right. You can see when the triptans came out, and you don't need to be memorizing when they came out. That's not that important for me. But I do want you to know your drugs very well. The site of action is going to be the same for all of them. And we're going to try and talk about how you have to be able to get to that trigeminal nerve network, bind to your serotonin receptor subtypes very selectively, and how that changes it. We will talk about onset, we'll talk about duration, we'll talk about bioavailability. They're going to change depending upon the structure. So Imitrex was very hydrophilic, or not so lipophilic. We wanted it a little bit more lipophilic, so what you're going to see when we start talking about all these other ones is they're going to make them a little bit more lipophilic. They can get across the blood-brain barrier. They can get absorbed much better. All right, so there's lots of different options you have available. And physicians oftentimes will tend to put people on Imitrex first to see if they get relief because it's the gold standard. It's what first came out. People usually are pretty well tolerated on it. But in no way, shape, or form does that mean that that's the best one. Okay, of your triptan categories, remember when we were talking about the ergots and we talked about clusters? What were any drugs that were effective for clusters? What was it? Cafergoth? Migranol? Is that it?
Yeah.
All right. The only one that's in the triptan category that's going to be effective for treating clusters is IV Imitrex or sumatriptan. That's going to be the only one. So it has a very fast onset, so that's why you'll oftentimes have people that have carry their syringes of Imitrex if they suffer from clusters so that they can give it to themselves immediately. If you try and give any other triptan to try and treat a cluster, it's not going to work, okay? The only other thing I want to point out, and we're going to talk about each one of these individually, is remember when we talked about menstrual migraines? What did we recommend so far with menstrual migraines? I can't hear anything. Okay, bromocriptine. And did we recommend anything else? Okay. So guess what? We're going to have another option with menstrual migraines here, because triptan, or Prova, is going to be useful for treating menstrual migraines, and it's FDA approved for that. That's going to be the only one in that category, but we'll talk more about that. So more about these when we get to them. Are there differences between the triptans? Very subtle. They all share similar side effects. That's why we call the side effects more of triptan sensations, because they're just side effects shared among most of the triptans. If one triptan fails, will another triptan work? What do you think? Very likely it would. Okay, so just because someone goes on Emitrax and it doesn't work for them, some people think, well, forget it, I guess I tried, you know. And no, that's not good enough, okay? The biggest problem that you'll face probably is insurance issues, because insurance might pay for Emitrax. They might not want to pay for the drug that's the best for them. So that's very frustrating. All right, so there's lots of things that you should pay attention to. There's differences among the triptans. They're very subtle. Drugs that produce vasoconstriction, limit inflammation. Oh, inflammation. Some of the ones we're going to talk about will target both. They'll cause vasoconstriction and they'll decrease inflammation. Those are going to be very good. Have you guys heard of the drug Trexima? Yeah. That one's going to, it's Imitrex pretty much. It's super triptan, okay? But it's mixed with naproxen. What do you know about naproxen? There you go. So people can get relief on that one. Patients on monoamine oxidases, you got to be careful about taking triptans, except there's one exception. We're going to talk about nartriptan, how it's metabolized primarily through P450 instead. So it gives you an option in case someone is on an NAOI inhibitor. Be careful of your high-risk groups, okay? We talked about that already. And overall, the triptans are pretty effective. We're going to primarily target the serotonin D and B receptor. The D is going to be primarily, will alleviate our inflammation, and our B is going to primarily cause our vasoconstriction. So you're going to see, as we go through each of the triptans, you'll repeatedly see B and D a lot, because you're primarily trying to target your decreased inflammation and cause vasoconstriction. Remember those side effects we call triptan sensations? These things are shared among most all of the triptans. So as long as you know what triptan sensations are and they cause like tingling, numbing, anxiety, stuff like this, these are the common side effects you see with triptans. I'm not going to have you memorize every little nitpicky side effect. So understand that these are things that are shared among all of them. We already know what a recurrent headache is. We want to try and avoid that. There's lots of things that you can figure out to diagnose a migraine. Generally speaking, if a patient suffers from really bad headaches, they'll go to their physician. Actually, a lot of people won't even go to their physician. They're crazy, unless they maybe don't have insurance. But there's still really cheap options, especially if you could give them an ergotamine derivative. But anyway, people that suffer from true migraine headaches, it's really important that they get relief, because if they go uncontrolled for a very long time, what are some problems that you could see? What do you think? Especially if someone suffers from clusters or really severe migraines, if they go untreated for a very long time, what do you think? Is that going to be good? I mean, people can suffer through a lot of pain, some people, right? Some people can't suffer through anything, right? But are you worried about it? You think they're going to be fine? They could be fine, right? But what could happen? Well, what's happening in the brain? Let's start there.
Vasodilation.
Okay, brain vasodilation. Your trigeminal nerve network is overexcited. Okay. So what might happen over a long time of overexcitement? Desensitized in what way? What do you mean? You mean you're not going to feel pain anymore?
No.
problems with them eventually?
Stroke.
Stroke? Who said that? It doesn't matter. You're right. Okay? But eventually suffer a stroke. Okay? So, genius. Okay. Good. So, you have to worry about things like that. Sometimes in aneurysms, you know, you have to try, you want people to be under, you have them under control. So basically what I'm saying is you go into your physician's office, they won't do a brain scan on every person that comes in. Because let's say you do a brain scan on someone and they're not having a migraine right now. Is it going to show anything? No. And plus, what's the problem with doing brain scans every time you turn around? They're very costly, right? So they're not going to generally do that. They'll just talk to you, and they'll try and get certain information from you. Okay, on a scale from 0 to 10, how painful is it? How long does it last? Blah, blah, blah. And they'll talk about things like this, and they'll figure out, okay, do you suffer from nausea vomiting when you have these? Do you suffer from light sensitivity, sound sensitivity? And they'll try and figure it out that way to figure out if you have a migraine. Okay, we're going to start with our drugs now. So the first one is Imitrex. We talked about this because this is the first one that came out. It's our gold standard, and this is the one that generally is given first. We're going to compare it to Migranal because that's the last one we talked about, and this is an ergot derivative. Notice here this tetracyclic structure. They knock those two other rings out, and they just keep the indole, okay? And so they learned certain things structurally from the ergot derivatives, and they wanted to build upon improving the selectivity of the ergot derivatives, because that's the problem. The ergots are less selective. That's why they cause more of the side effects. So what they did, and they were very successful with Imitrex, is they made a molecule that was very selective for that B and D serotonin receptor subtype. And so you knocked out a lot of your nausea and vomiting so that now people can actually, if they suffer from a migraine, take their medication and still work. So you've saved a lot of money in that aspect, and you've helped the patient. So it's a win-win situation. Now, this drug, though, is going to be metabolized by monoamine oxidase, and that's going to be shared among a lot of your triptans, except for one that we'll talk about. And so you got to be careful, because if someone's on an MAOI inhibitor, it's going to be contraindicated. You're either going to want to do what if somebody's on an MAOI inhibitor?
Change their therapy of MAOI.
Okay, change their therapy of MAOI inhibitor, okay, because then you could give them this, or you might have to give an alternate form of medication, something that's primarily metabolized more to maybe P450s, right, than monoamine oxidase. All right, I forgot your name. I'm sorry. Keith?
Oh, yeah.
Well, again, it depends on tailoring it to the patient. You want to try and figure out which drug would be best for them, okay? Sometimes you can take them off a certain med if you know that you can put them on a different medication. And let me give you an example. They suffer from clusters, right? We talked about how IV Imitrex would be great for clusters, right? So let's say, you know, you have a patient that's suffers from a little high blood pressure, okay? Just a very, very minor, okay? So you're like, well, I don't really want to put them on an ergot derivative, okay? So of my choices left, I would rather have them on IV Imitrex. So I know that the benefits are going to way outweigh the risks because they have a little bit of just very slightly high hypertension. But let's say you know that this gets primarily metabolized through monoamine oxidase. So, if they're on an MAOI inhibitor, might you want to switch to MAOI inhibitor? Yeah, that would be a good case. Okay, usually the starting dose is around 25 milligrams. You can redose it 2 hours later if you don't get relief, okay? But, you know, you have to be careful about counseling your patients with that. One thing I want to point out, though, is the injection, you're going to see very, very fast onset. And so the injection is usually the only one that's recommended for the clusters, if you suffer from cluster migraines. The biggest disadvantage of Imitrex is the 46% headache recurrence. Okay, this is just really unacceptable. Okay, almost half of the people that take it will experience this other, this additional recurrent headache. Well, another big problem is that Imitrex is only going to have roughly about 15% bioavailability. And the reason is because of the large first pass effect you're going to see and an incomplete absorption for this one. Because you have low lipophilicity with this molecule. So the 15% bioavailability is something we're going to seriously want to improve. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to try and make the molecule a little bit more lipophilic so we can get more absorbed and increase the bioavailability. This one is, because it doesn't have a lot of lipophilicity to it, it has a harder time. Very, very little of it gets across the BBB, okay? And so even though we know that the blood-brain barrier is compromised during a migraine attack, we're like, okay, maybe some of it can get across. That can help us. Maybe it suggests there's some peripheral sites that could alleviate it. But we want to improve the ability to get it across the BBB. Because what? If we make a more lipophilic drug, how does that affect dose, possibly? The dose that you would have to take to get the effect could be lower. How does that affect side effects? Decreases that, okay? So these are things that we like to think about. This drug will also relieve nausea and vomiting, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity, so you can go back to work. It does have a short elimination half-life, though, so you got to be careful about trying to give this to somebody that has, that has a long migraine, because if you give this to somebody that has suffers from like a migraine that lasts for 8 hours or so and it has a very short duration, then you're going to have a problem. All right, we already talked about the poor bioavailability. Okay, what was your question?
Why is blood-brain barrier compromised?
Well, they believe your blood-brain barrier is compromised because of some of the neuropeptides that are released when in the trigeminal nerve network, and so it causes compromises in your efflux pumps and stuff like that that try and pump things out in your blood-brain barrier. Because you have vasodilation happening, you know, I don't have all the answers. I'll be the first one to ask you neurologists don't have all the answers either. They just have realized that they suspect reasons for why, or what probably compromises the blood-brain barrier, and they know it's compromised, they just don't know all the answers as to yet the pharmacology of why it's compromised. But they do believe it has a lot to do with those neuropeptides that are released by the trigeminal nerve network. Okay, other question?
If my example is by MAO-A, so MAO-B inhibitor would be better as a choice of an alternative?
Yeah, but we're not going to recommend any inhibitors, MAOI inhibitors, across the board. That's the standard practice. Okay? It's a good question, though. Okay? All right. Any other questions so far? Okay. All right. Let's see. More about Imitrex. Okay. We already talked about the BBB. We've already talked about that. Did I talk about the onset yet? I guess that's on the previous slide. Did I talk about that? All right. So, we talked, or I might have alluded to it with the IV form. So the IV form that you would typically use for clusters has a very, very fast onset. It can differ with some people, but maybe 10 minutes, okay, maybe 5 minutes, it depends. Roughly between 5 and 10 minutes, they will get it under control with IV. If you take the tablets, roughly it could be 15 minutes to 30 minutes for an onset. We still call that a pretty fast onset. So you can use this for acute attacks. So that's roughly what you're going to see with this one. If you have people that have liver dysfunctions, though, you're going to want to either lower the dose with them or be very cautious with this. Pregnancy category, do you think we're going to have pregnancy category X's with the triptans? I mean, yeah, we already know. If you're pregnant, you really don't want to be on any prescription medication. But realistically, we sometimes have to have people on prescription medication, right? So do you think the triptans are going to be pregnancy category X? No. Actually, Imitrex is a pregnancy category C. Have you learned about what I mean by that? Yeah, you haven't learned in classes? Okay, so when you see pregnancy category, like B, for example, you're like, okay. Or even pregnancy pregnancy category C. It's acceptable, okay? You'd ideally want to see B, but C would still be acceptable. What it's saying is that with B, in some animals, they've seen some effects, okay, on the fetus, but no effects in the humans, like in human studies. With pregnancy category C, they have, with B, they suspected some. With pregnancy category C, your incidences go up. So they've seen a lot more in animals, not in humans. So you could still take this if you were pregnant, but you have to outweigh the benefits. Do the benefits outweigh the risks of taking it? All right, I don't remember what this is. Let's see if it's still up. What's happened with the body? Well, we'll have to watch it next time. I don't know why this thing's going to work. All right, but actually, I remember what that video was. It was a decent video. We'll watch it next time. It's talking more about the medication, and then it kind of introduces you to Trexamet. And basically, we know the drawbacks of Imitrex, right? And what did we just talk about? Do you remember anything? The drawbacks? 46% headache recurrence and stuff, right? So what Trexamet's going to do is it's going to add in naproxen. It's going to take, bless you, Imitrexin, it's going to add in naproxen. So actually, this one, people get pretty decent relief using this product because not only are you causing vasoconstriction, but you're also targeting what?